Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by Lockwood Phillips, my old friend. This week we're talking about stock markets around the world. We're also talking about the independence of the FBI and the independence of the British Civil Service. I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms this evening here on the Talk Station. Look forward to the conversation. As a matter of fact, one of the things I'm going to be interesting to hear about is, several issues that have taken place over the past couple of days. The famous Super Bowl, the big game, and of course now the big story related to the economy and the stock market. So it's going to be with a great deal of interest to find out how the rest of the world sees what's been taking place here in the continental United States and find out, what is next. And we'll get tomorrow's news today with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. But before we even get into all of that, Tom, let's talk about the weather in London. What is it like?
Oh, last week I was talking about how spring was on the way. Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a blast of icy winter weather. The thermometer has dropped.
And so now, is this typical this time of year?
Oh, yes. It can go either way this time of year.
Okay.
One day you could find it bright and sunny and sort of daffodils starting to poke their heads above the ground, which they are.
Right.
And the crocuses. And the next day, this icy wind sweeps through the air down from Siberia or Scandinavia, and the winter coats are back out again.
I understand. All right, Tom, let's look at the events of the past week. And I'm curious, Super Bowl, that, of course, is still a topic of conversation here in the States. And I'm not only the Super Bowl, but also the commercials. But first, the Super Bowl. Was there a great deal of interest in that in the UK and in Europe?
Absolutely. There is a huge following for NFL football here now. Well, I don't know about huge. It's not as big as soccer, for instance.
Right, but still, yeah.
It is followed. It's got Super Bowl has big viewing figures in Europe as a whole. My son, for instance, is absolutely glued to the NFL all season and stays up until all hours to watch Super Bowl. I tape it and watch it the next day. But it was helped by the fact that this year it was an incredible game, of course.
It was.
And that is going to help the viewing figures for next year as well. Not helped so much by Justin Timberlake, but there we have it.
Oh, well, now wait a second. Was there a lot of discussion? Was there a lot of discussion with a lot of headline stories about the game and particularly the famous play, the Philly
yes.
special?
Yes, there were. There were a lot of discussions. It was the lead item on the BBC.
Really?
Justin Timberlake, going back to him, his performance was described as underwhelming.
Right. And it's been criticized here as well. All right. So the story associated with the football game was compelling. It does intrigue me. Football has pretty unique rules as opposed to, you've got hockey and lacrosse, and those are also, a lot of hockey played in Europe as well. But the whole issue, the discussion of football is still something of interest there than in the UK and in the European community, Western European community.
Oh, yes. And they have minor league football here as well. There are some small professional teams in the UK, Italy, Turkey, France, and so forth. I think all sports are becoming more and more international as the internet grows and cable television grows,
right,
so that you have different niche audiences in different parts of the world, which will follow the sports they left behind at home and then introduce other people to them.
Well, very interesting. All right. One other quick question related to the Super Bowl, and then we'll get to the stock market. That is the commercials. And a lot of the major manufacturers and retailers use the Super Bowl as sort of a coming out opportunity, either for a continuous program that'll be aired throughout the year, or in many instances almost as an experimental opportunity to promote their product. And I'm just wondering, there was an interesting commercial one that I found very intriguing with the Dodge Ram using Vikings. Of course, the fact that the game was played in Minnesota, where the Vikings play, I wondered, were the commercials, were they discussed? Is there
any
interest?
We didn't see the commercials.
Really?
No, it was on the BBC, which doesn't have commercials. And so when the commercials came on, you had analysts come on to describe what was what had happened in the previous plays.
Interesting. That is sad for you, because much of the discussion and the conversations around the Super Bowl are directly related to the commercials and not to the football game. All right. Very interesting. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, with us this afternoon. Tom, let's talk about finances, and particularly the stock market. And of course, we're going to get a little broader than just the stock market and go into the world economic community as well. But first, how has that story been played since Monday, when the stock market had a radical decline? Then Tuesday, a significant rebound. Today, well, muddling along. What was the coverage Monday?
Well, everyone was talking about a stock market crash, but they also all agreed, all the papers were agreed, that it was coming down. Mm-hmm. But that the underlying foundations were still firm. They thought it was going to correct itself, and it has. Now, it's something, as you know, it's been a worldwide, a global experience. It's mm-hmm. not just been in the U.S.
Right.
It started with the Dow Jones when it dropped, I think, 4.5% on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day in Asia, the Nikkei opened 5% down and stayed down. And then the Europeans did not go as badly. As the sun rose across the world, the Europeans started off about 2% down, and then closed about 1.8% down. So I think then the Dow Jones looks at it and says, well, maybe it's not as bad.
Mm-hmm.
and you get this slight recovery. There are a lot of people are putting forward suggestions as to why this is and why Europe did not do as badly on its stock exchanges. I don't know if you're interested in hearing about that.
I am. We may have to go to a break in the middle of it, but I'm curious, what would be some of the observations? What were some of the comments?
When they refer to the U.S., they say basically that the unemployment now is too low. Mm. And this is pushing up wage inflation. And that's going to cause the interest rates, the Fed to push up the interest rates.
Well,
and this will affect the profitability of companies. And so people are moving their money out of shares and into bonds. That is it. On top of that, there are concerns about the U.S. government deficit. You've mm-hmm. got lower taxes, increased right. spending on immigration, infrastructure, disaster relief, and defense. The question is, where's that money going to come from? If it's not going to come from taxes, well, you're going to have to borrow it, which again pushes up interest rates and reduces profitability in the corporate sector. That's according to The Guardian and The Times. The other one is just straightforward profit taking, because there's been a big boom, of course, in recent months. And they think that the fact that a lot of it is being determined by machine algorithms now,
right,
and not by humans.
Trading. I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break on that. I want to come back and we'll wrap it up on the economy, because I want to talk about the world economy as well, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to remind you, tomorrow's news today here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with the expanded Look Ahead World Analysis for the week being the 12th of February. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas flies to Moscow on Monday to try and persuade President Putin to take a more active role in Arab-Israeli affairs. The Palestinian president is furious about President Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem and said that the U.S. can no longer act as honest broker. Kuwait is hosting a donor conference on Monday to raise money for the reconstruction of Iraq following the defeat of ISIS. While neighboring Syria, the Turks continue their offensive against the U.S.-supported Kurds. The U.S. and Turkish defense ministers will discuss their growing differences during a regular meeting of NATO defense ministers on Wednesday and Thursday, along with the Trump administration's nuclear weapons plans. Most of the NATO defense ministers will go on to the Munich Security Conference on Friday through Sunday. Chancellor Angela Merkel plays host to nearly 400 participants, including the Israeli, Egyptian, Ukrainian, and Polish leaders. The trial is expected to end in Paris on Wednesday. The man dubbed the Daesh landlord, Jawad Bandaoud, faces 4 years in jail for renting out his apartment to the ringleader of the November 2015 Paris terror attack. Bandaoud says he did not know that he was renting his apartment to a terrorist and that he is a cocaine-sniffing womanizer, not a religious fundamentalist. Donald Trump on Monday is expected to unveil his long-awaited infrastructure plans. Administration officials have said it will involve between $1 and $2 trillion in spending over the next 10 years. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange makes another legal attempt to leave his Ecuadorian embassy sanctuary on Tuesday. The London court last week rejected an appeal by Assange's lawyers that he should be released because Sweden have dropped their extradition request. But the judge said they could try again, using a public interest argument. In South Africa, it may be the end for President Jacob Zuma when the ruling ANC's national executive meets on Saturday. It appears that his ousting as ANC party leader and the postponement of the State of the Nation address were the two final straws. Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, meanwhile, is off on a state visit to India starting on Saturday. Relations between the two countries are reckoned to be at a new high because of Canada's open immigration policy and India's high-tech industries. China starts New Year's celebrations on Friday. It is the year of the dog. Children born in this year are said to be brave, forthright, and loyal as a dog. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom joins us from London. Yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. It's nearly midnight as this program is beginning to air this evening live here on the Talk Station. Tom, we were talking a moment ago about the economy and, of course, the concerns. I thought it was intriguing, the observation of some of the remarks made related to the U.S. economy, that our unemployment situation is too low, which I understand the concerns there because of wage inflation. But the other aspect of this, and this is one that I'm intrigued with, is the topic of interest rates and, of course, borrowing. The U.S., of course, has dropped their interest rates, the Fed, to almost zero, ostensibly to zero. There's been effort to raise those interest rates over a period of time to give, if you will, the Fed a little bit more breathing room or buffer zone should another major economic calamity occur, similar to the one of 2009. The question I have is, looking at these interest rates and of course, the actions of the Fed, does that concern the rest of the world governments and their economies? It's intriguing that this would be a topic of discussion.
Yes, all the central banks follow each other. The Fed follows the European Central Bank and vice versa. And the Bank of England follows, you know, they're all linked together. All of their interest rates are around the zero. I think Japan is even 0.5% below zero, or was at one point. I just want to say, you know, they're all linked together. We're very much in a world economy. We've got a 24/7 stock market, which goes across several continents. We've got 24/7 interest rates, commodities, and everything else. We're in the financial world is totally globalized. Even if manufacturing
Right.
Well, manufacturing is as well. Even if Trump is trying to stop the globalization of manufacturing, finance is, and it won't be reversed. Now, you might ask, in fact, I'll just feed this to you. Please ask, why did the Europeans rally a bit? Because I think it was the Nikkei went down further. And one of the reasons was because in Japan, they've got even lower unemployment. I think it's around the 1% level.
That's true.
1 or 2% right. are unemployed in Japan. And so they were even more worried about wage inflation, which I think is one of the major factors. But in Europe, a lot of the countries, not all of them, but a lot of the countries have very high unemployment. And so they're not going to have the same wage inflation.
But they
have high growth at the moment, but low employment. And so there's more scope for raising interest rates.
Well, you know, the other aspect of that related to the high unemployment in some of the European communities, and we've also got to address that even within the Middle East as well, is that it creates a sense of political unrest. And we're going to get into politics here in a few moments. Very interesting conclusion on this. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, before we move on to a few other items, we've got to talk about the issue of British civil service and Brexit and so forth, and we will get to Trump and FBI. But my question to you, Tom, is the world economy, and it's been described as being in a Goldilocks environment. There's anticipation of economic improvements worldwide. Does that not, in some sense, present a positive note politically going forward? And then I want to go into Brexit.
The IMF has said that, things look good. The underlying foundations are very good. But economics being what it is, anything could
happen.
Tip it one way or the other.
Right. All right, let's move on to, I want to stay with economics for a few moments here. British exit and the British civil service. We talked about this in the past, but also I'm curious, what's the future now with Britain in light of the economy? Has this changed? Has this forced the hand of those who are looking to exit the European Union?
No, I don't think the stock market has had anything to do with any impact on Brexit negotiations. As we speak, the British cabinet is meeting to discuss exactly what sort of Brexit it wants.
Okay.
And those discussions will carry on until tomorrow. And the cabinet is completely divided, which is a huge problem. And recently, the Treasury published some statistics, and this is where we come down to the civil service.
Mm-hmm.
The Treasury published some statistics saying that whichever way you leave the EU, it's going to create a hit on the British economy. There's just no way of avoiding it, says the civil servants at the Treasury.
Right.
Well, of course, the people who favor Brexit, the politicians who favor Brexit, say this is outrageous. How dare they say such a thing? Why don't they give us figures which say it will look good?
Right. The assumption is that they are concerned for their own careers, their own jobs.
No, that's not the assumption. The assumption is that they're not listening to their political masters.
Oh, okay.
And now the British have a tradition of an independent civil service.
Uh-huh.
Which is supposed to give its opinion to the politicians, who then make political decisions based on that information, which is independent.
Okay. I fully understand. Well, this does nicely segue beautifully into the topic of President Trump and the FBI. And split this conversation here, coming up to another break in a few minutes, but let's talk about that. The FBI, theoretically, civil service employees, there's a lot of questions and even breaking as we speak, Tom, about the, shall we say, the political flavor of the FBI. What is the story there in Europe? How are they following this?
Well, they're following with great interest. It's, again, very similar to the debate between the civil service in the UK and the politicians in the UK. And is the FBI independent? Should the FBI You know, you have several reports coming out. You have a report coming out by the Republicans. Obviously, that's going to be partisan.
Right.
Because it comes from a political party. You have a report which is may or may not be coming out from the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Depends on whether or not President Trump allows it to come out. And that will be partisan. Obviously, it will be partisan. What you need is independent report. The only way you can get an independent report is to have an independent body prepare and issue the report.
Are you aware of, and you may not be aware of this, and this is a story that even is fairly new here over the past couple of days, and that, of course, is that there is an inspector general whose job, of course, as an independent observer, is now, shall we say, tossing the books on all the documentation and information inside the FBI. And some interesting conclusions are coming out, bits and pieces of information related to when folks in the FBI knew information, and, of course, the topic of the Steele dossier. By the way, what has been the opinion of the British press about the Steele dossier and his efforts to provide information to initially the Clinton campaign and now the FBI? Has there been how is Mr. Steele perceived there in the European community, since he supposedly worked for MI5 or MI6?
MI6.
What's the opinion?
I think everything on that is reported pretty straight. They all find it a bit incredible,
mm-hmm.
What's in the Steele dossier. The fact that Trump was supposed to have urinated on
he had
prostitutes or something.
The prostitutes. But no,
that all sounds a bit incredible
and a little salacious.
I think people here think it's incredible, but they don't know. They don't know whether it's true or not, and they're waiting for the Mueller inquiry. I should point out what Le Monde has said recently, which says that they think Trump seems to be preparing the ground either for a dismissal of Mueller or of discrediting his final report before it is issued. And that either way is wrong.
Well, okay.
That is what Le Monde is saying. Zerker at the BBC, Anthony Zerker, who does a lot of analyses, is saying that the Republican memo is either a dud or a bomb, and he doesn't know which.
Well, it is interesting because it is raising some serious questions as to the propriety of the FISA report, the FISA warrant. As a matter of fact, I want to get back to FISA for just a moment after this break with you, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. And we're going to chat briefly, Tom, I want to give you a heads up, on the topic of terrorism and how that whole process began. Just quick analysis on your part. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as always, to remind you, LookAheadNews.com, tomorrow's news today. Tom, I do appreciate this. And by the way, just want to remind everyone that Tom is joining us. This is being pre-recorded. He is sleeping away as this is airing live on the talk station. It's nearly midnight his time as this goes live. Tom, I threw a curve at you just a moment ago, but a real quick question, and I'm just curious, the flavor, if you will, of the community at large, and the community at large being the European community, but also, if you wish, we can spread it into the world community as well. The FISA, that's the federal court, the court that has been established to ferret out potential terrorists and communications from the U.S. to foreign communities, foreign countries. And I'm wondering, the genesis of all of this is 9/11. And I'm wondering, what is the feeling there in Europe? You know, there was a heightened awareness and concern about foreign interest, be they here in the States or in Europe, and the concern about terrorists. And of course, we've had since then the attacks on Al-Qaeda and ISIS. But I'm wondering now, almost, 9 years later, or 8 years later, as I'm losing, 7 years later, I'm losing count here, from 18 years later, since 9/11, the question is, what's the feeling there in the European community about terrorism? It's, we haven't had any major terrorist attacks of nature of recent notice, but I'm wondering, this whole issue, is it losing some of its edge, shall we say?
Well, certainly, the longer the gaps between terrorist attacks, the greater interest in it. You know, for anything like this to remain at the top of the agenda, it has to remain in the headlines. That just almost goes without saying. But having said that, it still affects the immigration argument, mm-hmm. Which is a big argument here in Europe, as well as it is in the States. And it still affects the political agenda as people talk about expenditure on police and anti-terrorist activities. Mm-hmm. They want to maintain expenditure on that. So it's still very much on the agenda, but it's not at the top of the agenda at the moment.
Well, this is going to be a new awareness here in the States on the issue of FISA, and we'll talk about that at a later date. Let's move on to other major issues, and one that we've been wanting to talk about for several days or several interviews, and we've not gotten to it. Cape Town, and this is a big story, and it's beginning to really get attention. Cape Town, South Africa.
Yeah, it's running out of water.
Mm-hmm.
It's had a serious drought now for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
No really serious rainfall to fill its reservoirs for 3 years. And it is dependent on rainfall for its reservoirs and for its water. It doesn't have much in the way of aquifers and boreholes and wells and things like that.
And what are the alternatives? What are the alternatives?
They're talking about actually literally turning off the taps.
Well, I know. In
April. So there aren't many alternatives.
But there
is no, you know, it's pray for rain of thing.
Right, but if that does not happen, I mean, is there any contingency for bringing water? How large is Cape Town? First question.
It's several million people.
There is water nearby, is there not? Maybe the
It's called the ocean.
The ocean, yes.
There's two of them.
Yes.
The Indian and the Atlantic.
I'm wondering, any effort to
they do not have any desalinization plants.
Okay.
There have been no plans to build any. It would take a long time to do so. I mean, they just expected all this time. They expected the rain to come. They have never had in the history of Cape Town a drought that has lasted this long.
Well, I saw a story that said that droughts of this nature are well, in the history of Cape Town, because it is not 300 years old. But they've said this is an event that has occurred in the past 300 years, something of this significant drought. Let's move in. Staying with South Africa, by the way, let's talk about Zuma.
Absolutely unprecedented. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, he was due to give the State of the Nation address. They've postponed it. They have never, ever postponed a State of the Nation address. Now, I don't know of any country which has ever really postponed the State of the Nation, which is the equivalent, you know, to the State of the Union address.
What does this presume?
They postponed it because the opposition has said that they would disrupt it.
Mm-hmm.
With a call for a vote of no confidence, and they would just march up and down the aisles and everything else. And so the speaker has called for postponement. While it's being postponed, Zuma's ANC party will be meeting to decide whether or not they are going to sack Zuma and replace him with someone else.
So a lot of people are not aware of this. If you would, very quickly, tell some folks about the actions of the South African president.
Basically, he has swindled millions, if not billions, out of the economy.
And there have been
several attempts to try and impeach him. They've all failed because he had the support of the ANC. But he was recently voted out of the leadership of the ANC, and so he's lost that support.
And he's also, there are some questions about issues associated with property rights.
Well, I mean, his own property, yeah.
Yeah.
He basically built himself a village using government money, his own private compound, and a road 14 miles long to connect it to the main road.
All right, let's talk about other elections. Let's move to Italy, and you have a story here about the Italian elections.
Yeah, this is interesting because it does have wider implications. And I think it's changed as a result. I think the situation is changing this afternoon as a result of the fact that they've got a coalition now in Germany. Now, in Italy, it looks as if a coalition of right-wing parties is in the lead. And these parties are not, they're Eurosceptic. They don't want to pull out of the EU, but they've been making noises about pulling out of the Euro. And they're in the lead at the moment, or they were. Now, one of the reasons they want to pull out of the Euro is because Italy is one of these countries which is not benefiting from membership in the Euro. It needs more support. And the EU, pushed by Germany, has had an austerity program for the last few years, ever since 2010, really. And so the Italian economy has suffered, the Greek economy has suffered, the Spanish economy has suffered. They haven't had the support from Germany or the Eurozone.
Now,
the coalition in Germany has now put the another party, the SPD, in charge of the finance ministry, and they want to end the austerity measures in the rest of Europe.
We've got to get to the issue of Germany here in just a moment. My other question, though, with Italy and the Italian community, Italy, Spain, Greece, of course, Ireland, were all countries that were suffering significant financial stress. What is the future of the Italian lira? And what's the future?
Well, the Italian lira, it doesn't exist. It's now the euro.
Okay.
It uses the euro.
What is the future of the Italian economy then?
Well, the Italian economy is picking up a bit. Just because the Eurozone is picking up. The Eurozone is up to about 2.7% growth. The Italian economy a year ago was almost zero. Now it's at 1.7% growth.
Is it improving in spite of the, and we're going to just touch back this very quickly. I want to move on to Germany. But with the experience of the past week, have any major impact on the Italian economy?
Not yet. I mean, the market went down.
But it did not significantly.
But now it's stabilized. I mean, you know, if the market were to continue to go down, obviously that would have an impact, but it's too early to say.
All right. Let's move to Chancellor Merkel, Angela Merkel, and Germany. What's the future of her continuation as the chancellor?
Oh, well, she will continue as chancellor. But I think I was reading a quick assessment from Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, who said basically that her position has been weakened. It has been weakened because it took so long. It took 4 months, more than 4 months, to negotiate a coalition.
And what was the negotiation issue?
There were several negotiation issues. They included immigration. They included the euro, European integration, taxes, workers' rights, a whole range of different issues. But she has been weakened because it took so long. And because now, in order to achieve a coalition, she's had to give away very, very key ministries to the Social Democratic Party. And so she's sort of isolated at the top.
Tom, we've got to go to a break, but I have to bring this to a point. The whole issue of nationalism, the versus globalism, that is, I know that it's been, and this is, you're a globalist, let's be candid, but this has been an arduous situation. What's the future of a united Europe? Very quickly.
you know, it's still up in the air. You know, it's under discussion. This is very much an evolving concept.
All right.
And it will be evolving for some time yet.
Well, definitely. It's just this is a major bump in the road. Our program, of course, this afternoon, Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. To remind you, for tomorrow's news today, go to LookAheadNews.com. Stay with us. We'll wrap it up here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Orr. Global economics is a balancing act. If one side of the scales moves up, the other side goes down. This truism was well demonstrated by the recent volatility in the world's stock markets. Only a few weeks ago, the IMF forecast the best year for economic growth in 10 years, 3.9%. 2 weeks later, the stock markets plunged around the world. Then they recovered, but left a crowd of nervous investors in their wake. Stock markets are concerned with profit, you see, and it is an economic irony that growth can hit profits. The drop started in New York, which is logical because an unpredictable president should lead to a volatile market. Donald Trump's economic policies have, in the short term at least, been a success. American unemployment is now down to 4.1%, and growth is up to 2.6%. Full employment is reckoned to be 5% of the labor market. Below that, an economist reckoned that you need to import workers in order to maintain growth. Trump's immigration policies are doing the opposite. If the country does not import workers, then the law of supply and demand will push up wages, which is exactly what is happening. Higher wages means higher corporate costs, which means less profits, which is reflected in the share prices. This is why, when the markets opened in Asia, they plunged even further and faster, 5% down compared to 4.8% in the U.S. Unemployment in Japan is 2.8%. China, 3.1%, and South Korea, 3.3%. It also helps to explain why the European markets dropped less than 2% when they opened later in the day. Unemployment in the Eurozone is 8.7%. There were some other items that caused the scales to tip. Wage inflation fuels general inflation, which the central banks usually correct by increasing interest rates. These have been at record lows. In Japan, investors in treasury bonds receive only 0.07% interest. All the central banks have said rates are going up. This means two things. It will become more expensive for companies to borrow money, which again hits profits, and investors will start to shift savings from shares to government bonds and banks. Finally, there is government spending, especially in the United States, where the Trump administration is dramatically increasing spending to cover its disaster relief bill, anti-immigration costs, and a huge jump in the defense budget. Next week, the White House is expected to announce that it will spend up to $2 trillion on improving America's infrastructure. At the same time, the Trump administration has dramatically cut taxes. This means that there's a strong likelihood that the U.S. government will need to borrow more, which, because of the supply and demand law, will lead to higher interest rates and draw more cash away from the financial markets. Trump hopes that the increased deficit will be offset by increased tax revenues from corporate growth. This is the holy grail of government economics and goes a long way to explaining jangled market nerves. The U.S. is not alone. Japan, South Korea, and Russia are all increasing their defense budgets because of the tense international situation. Both China and Russia have recently indicated the start of a new and expensive nuclear arms race after Trump's recent nuclear posture review called for more and better ICBMs and the development of a new generation of low-yield nuclear weapons. In Europe, they have had nearly 10 years of German-imposed austerity, which has kept the economies of Greece, France, Italy, Spain, and Portugal just on the right side of the bankruptcy courts. This looks set to change. The newly agreed German coalition government has resulted in a social democrat in charge of the Ministry of Finance, and the social democrats plan to loosen the purse strings. German social democrats also have the foreign affairs portfolio and are marching in step with French President Emmanuel Macron. He wants to move further and faster towards European integration, all of which costs money. The world forecasts remain good, but the scales are also delicately balanced.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. Wrapping it up here with him this afternoon, or actually this evening. Evening as we hear it, we're actually recording this in the afternoon because it's nearly midnight as this airs live here on the talk station. Tom, the topic, a new arms race. We've got about a minute and a half before we get to, well, to a couple of minutes before we get to the Chinese exam. But tell me about the new arms race and what's the concern there?
Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but both the Chinese and the Russians this week have criticized the nuclear posture review of Donald Trump, in which he suggested that, in which it was suggested that the U.S. needs to build more low-yield nuclear weapons. I think it's pretty clear that what is going to happen if they go ahead with this policy, that the Chinese and the Russians are going to respond accordingly. Mm-hmm. Now, there's lots of other reasons that they would want to increase their defense. One is there's a conventional weapon which is being developed by the U.S. at the moment, which is a supersonic, high-speed, very intelligent, pinpoint, accurate conventional weapon designed to attack nuclear silos and nuclear establishments and destroy them before they're fired. That's another thing that the Russians and the Chinese don't like. That's not to say there are a lot of things that the Russians and the Chinese are doing which America doesn't like, because there are. And I think what we've got, we're right on the brink of yet another Cold War type arms race. And a lot of people agree with me on this. I wrote the book on it, The Encyclopedia of the Cold War, and it has all the signs of an even more complicated arms race than what you had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I think we really need to restart some arms talks.
All right,
again.
What role Europe in this conversation, then we'll move to China's exam question. What role is...
Well, Europe is a target more than anything else. It's
okay.
The prize.
Okay.
It's the prize, and there are nuclear weapons, of course, in France and Britain.
Mm-hmm.
They're not huge numbers, and generally they get lumped in because America, France, and Britain are all part of NATO. They get lumped in with the American forces, but Europe is the prize.
Okay. Let's move on to the other and final question, conversation for the day. The China, yes, a question too. The Chinese exam question.
This has driven Chinese parents absolutely bonkers. They have an exam at age 11, a national exam.
Mm-hmm.
And on this exam this year, here's the question for you. See if you can answer it. There was a ship carrying 22 goats and 15 sheep. How old was the captain?
To be sure, that's not the question. Really?
Yes, that was the question.
We have 22 sheep and 15 goats, is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
And we need
you can use any number you want.
And we need to determine the age of the captain?
Yes. The thing is, in China, and there was a reason for it, and I thought it was very good, actually. In China, they learn by rote memorization. They have huge classes of 50 or 60 students, and the teacher just says something and they repeat it back. You know, it's old-style education. And they work incredibly long hours, and they push the children all the time. But they don't learn to think creatively. And so the purpose of the question was to encourage the child to think out of the box.
Well,
so, And so the idea was they were looking for children who thought out of the box. You want to hear one of the answers that was out of the box?
Yeah. Yes.
If
yes.
We have time.
Yeah.
Okay. One student wrote, well, the weight of the sheep, of 22 sheep, however many it was, is roughly 1,000 tons. And uh-huh. the weight of the goats is roughly 1,000 tons. In order to carry 2,000 tons of live animals, you have to have a merchant marine officer's license, which
very good. Very good. Yeah,
Is at the age of 23. And so that was it.
I commend that student for thinking that. I'm looking at how 22 goats and 15 sheep, or however it goes, 22 sheep, 15 goats, would somehow give me the age of the captain. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. And by the way, we will be happy to take answers from the audience. Please feel free to call us or text us or email us, as a matter of fact. LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms. Tom, as always, thanks for being with us.
It was a pleasure, as always.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.